Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So thank you for coming today morning. And I'll be speaking today on the topic of redefining our relationship with ourselves. What I mean by this is that we talk about our relationship with Krishna, we talk about our relationship with others, and these relationships matter to us. If our relationship with a loved one is disrupted, then we feel very distressed by that. But before we can relate with anyone else effectively, we need to learn to relate with ourselves effectively. What does relating with ourselves mean itself? All of us, am I audible behind? Audible, okay. All of us have some self-conception. So I may think that I am very intelligent, or I am a good singer, I am an Indian, I am not so good at this, I am like that. We all have a self-conception about ourselves. And this self-conception is the filter through which everything about us goes. So when we interact with others, in every relationship we have, say if we go to office, we are working with a boss, then we have a self-understanding. Okay, I am the software engineer, and this is my project manager. So we have an understanding of our role, and our understanding of our role determines how we interact with others. So I was talking with one devotee I just came from America. I was 3 months in America. So the devotee was telling that nowadays we have cell phones with almost everyone. In fact, same people may have 2 or 3 cell phones also times. And in the past, they were in a temple, and the whole temple had only one phone, which is quite common, 20, 30 years ago. So he said, at one time, they were expecting Srila Prabhupada's call to come. And they would have, because they were expecting Prabhupada's plan, telling whether they were going to come or not, they're saying that, you know, they had turns of devotees sitting and watching the phone. When will it ring? So that they could come. So that one phone was there, and that one phone was a link for them with Prabhupada. So Prabhupada would normally not use phones so much. He would normally just write letters and correspond with people. So if that one phone was the link, then we will treasure that. They were treasuring that phone, making sure it's well positioned properly, it's functioning properly. As soon as it rings, we attend to it. So if something is a vital resource for us, and it is something which we absolutely need for doing something, say if we have got a new computer, and then we don't have the budget to buy another computer, that's the only computer which you have to manage with for 1 year, 2 years, and we are extremely careful, say, how we handle the computer. If a resource is valuable, it means it costs a lot. Vital means we need it a lot. They are two different things. Valuable and vital. Valuable things can be vital, but it's not the same. It costs a lot and we need it very much. And it is indispensable. That means it's not replaceable. Then if it's valuable, vital and indispensable, we will take very great care of it. So for all of us in our life, we are our first and fundamental resource. Whatever we are to do, whether it is in material life or in spiritual life, we are our most important resource. Now, nobody can do anything for us unless it is done through us. If somebody inspires us to do something, but it is we who have to do it. So in that sense, for every one of us, we are valuable, vital and indispensable. So that's why having a healthy relationship with ourselves is very important. I was at a mental health care center in America, in New Jersey. I gave a talk over there to the mental health care providers. And telling that there are various kinds of mental health problems that people have. So two of the most common problems are depression and anxiety. But these are more of emotions. And they said, underlying both of these is an attitude towards oneself. And that attitude is what people call as self-loathing. Self-loathing means people loathe themselves. They dislike themselves. They hate themselves. Now they won't show this to the world. In front of the world, people may, you know, oh, I'm so intelligent, I'm so smart, I've done this, I've done that. But inside, they detest themselves. There are some people whom we just can't bear to stay with. We just don't like their company. As soon as they come in, it's like we feel as if you're walking into a minefield now. What will cause an explosion, we don't know. Then if somehow we have to be with them, we'll be there for some time, and then we'll try to end that interaction and move away. But if that sort of detestful relationship starts happening with ourselves, then where can we go? We are the only resource that we have. Now, who will dislike themselves? We may dislike others, but why would we dislike ourselves? There can be many reasons for that. See, we all have a certain idea about how we should be. And then there is a reality of how we are. And this distance happens in spiritual life where, say, we want to live according to certain principles. But it can also happen in material life where people have a particular conception of how I should be. So, say some nowadays, there's a lot of emphasis on being thin and slim. And somebody doesn't like their own figure. Then they can start hating themselves. And people get into all kinds of eating disorders because of that. All kinds of mental disorders because of that. So, we have a particular image of how I should look. And this is how I look. And then because of that, I hate myself. Or I have a particular image of, you know, how I should present myself in public. I want to speak fluently. But when I speak, I start stuttering. Then I may start hating myself for that. You know, why am I like this? So there is, all of us, based on our particular cultural conceptions, have a particular conception of how we should be or how we want to be. And there is a reality of how we are. And when this distance is there in everyone. When this distance becomes unbearable for us, then we start disliking and detesting the reality of who we are. And that is very unhealthy. Of course, we could have the one negative attitude towards ourselves could be as a self-loathing, self-hatred. The other could also be that narcissism. Narcissism is that one is just thinking of I and I and I only. We live in an age of obsessive individualism. Obsessive individualism means, you know, everybody in today's world is a I specialist. Not the I specialist, but the I specialist. I was last year when I was in America, I did a series of programs in a college. So I got close to some of the students over there. So one of the boys was telling me that he grew up in a foster home. Then I asked him that after we got to, what happened? Did your parents pass away in an accident or something? He said, no. Both my parents are alive. I said, oh, really? Then what happened? Then why did you grow in a foster home? So he said, when I was 5, my parents separated. And when they separated, both of them told me that, you know, this marriage was the biggest mistake of my life. And they said, you remind me of that mistake. So both of them said, I don't want anything to do with you. And although he had both parents, he became a ward of the state. So then he tells me that now, if sometimes in our bhakti tradition, we have songs which compare Krishna to a mother or a father. He says, Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Dhanna Pran. He says, when I think Krishna is like a mother or father, I say, Krishna, let Krishna not be like my mother or father. So here, what has happened is that they, instead of seeing the child as a person in their own right, what are they seeing? You know, okay, sometimes people may not be able to get along together. and they may just have to separate. But why see the child through that filter? So here what has happened? One has become so self-centered that one doesn't care for even one's own child. So basically, when we become too self-centered, then we don't care for anything else. And narcissism actually comes from a Roman mythological character called Narcissus. So Narcissus was a very attractive looking male, and he loved to look at himself and admire his figure. So once he came next to a pond and he's looking, see how good I look. And he was peering over into the pond to look more clearly. He was looking at his face, his torso, his body. He bent over, and he fell into the pond. And he didn't know how to swim. And he died over there. So that is also a common phenomena where people may be obsessively self-centered. So where one likes to preen how good I am in front of everyone else. But actually, these two at one level seem opposite. One is hating oneself so much, or one is, you could say, so obsessed about oneself. But the two are not that different. The two are, we could say, the two sides of the same coin. There could be two ways in which we may be self-centered. One is, I am so good. And the other is, I am so bad. In both cases, the center is very much the self. So these concepts, so now we see in today's world, people have a lot of mental health issues. The mind causes a lot of problems. And when we say that, say somebody commits suicide, at that time, that is, we could say, the ultimate act in which the person destroys oneself. Why would someone destroy themselves like that? That is because they feel that they are good for nothing, their life is good for nothing, things around them are good for nothing. Something is going on in their head which makes them feel that, I can't live on anymore. So, what goes on inside the head has a lot of consequences for us and for others. And what goes on inside the head is not just the particular thoughts. Underlying those thoughts is a conception. So, means we all have particular worldviews, particular conceptions which shape the kind of thoughts we have. So, understanding our self-conception and changing our self-conception to a more healthy and affirmative one is vital. Otherwise, we may do various things. We may practice spiritual life. But it's like, suppose I'm eating food. But while eating food, if there are some germs in my stomach, if there are some digestive issues, then all the food is eaten by those germs. And I get no nourishment. So I'm eating the food, but there's no nourishment happening. But similarly, a negative self-conception can be like a parasite inside us. And everything that we do, it is just sucked up, gobbled up by that. And we can't function. So self-loathing, and we could say self-loving in a narcissistic sense. So both of them are two extremes. Now if we consider the topic which we are discussing is, this first session was understanding how the three modes shape our self-understanding, our self-conception. So broadly we are thinking about redefining our relationship with ourselves. Within that, we will discuss what the three modes are and how they shape our understanding of ourselves. So, among the three modes of material nature, there are various permutations and combinations that take place. But still, these three modes, they are overall forces that shape our perception of the world. So, I'll use two metaphors to explain what the modes are, and then we will see how that applies to our self-understanding. The standard metaphor used in scripture for modes is like a rope. It's guna means a rope. So a rope is something which is tied to something and it pulls something. So the ropes are like, the modes are like subtle ropes which pull our consciousness in particular directions. The other example could be that in the past we had cars with gears, and in each gear the car moves in a particular way. Say if you have one gear, you can move a steep up cliff, another gear where it just moves steadily at a straight motion, another gear where it moves when there is a starting off, we might have. So basically there are different gears, and those gears shape how the car will move. So the car is always going to move, but the gears, everything that we do, if they say the car is in the first gear, where it causes a lot of engine exhausted, then we may still press the same clutch, we may still press the same gas, still press the same brakes, but the functioning will be subtly and significantly different. So the soul is here, the body is here, the mind is here. So the modes act primarily on the mind. And the modes shape how the soul perceives the outer world and how the soul responds to the outer world. So the modes are like I said, our self-conception is what filters our perception. So the modes are also situated at the same level in the mind, through which our self-conception takes place. So what are the three modes of material nature? Three modes are goodness, passion, and ignorance. These are the Sanskrit words, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Yeah. That's interesting. These words themselves have a significant meaning. Sattva is associated with word sat. Sat chit ananda. That is, the soul is sat chit ananda. So, sattva refers to that state of existence which is very close to sat. Sat is eternal. The soul is eternal. Sattva is that mode of living which is very close to eternal. Rajas refers to, raga is attachment. So, rajas refers to that which causes attachment. Sattva is the state of existence which takes us towards transcendence. Rajas, it is a state of thinking in which we get attached very easily. And tamas refers to darkness. So tamasoma jyotirgama is a famous Upanishadic saying, that go from darkness to light. So tamas is the mode which causes darkness, in which we just can't see properly. So Krishna describes these characteristics in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and there he uses one word to describe each mode. So in 14.11, when he talks about the mode of goodness, he says, sarvadvareshu dehesmin prakasha upajayate jnanam yadatada vidyat vivruddham sattvamityuta. He says, sarvadvareshu dehesmin. The body has many doors, and when all these doors are illumined, prakasha upajayate. Now what is this prakasha? Is it that people in the mode of goodness, a light comes from their ears, light comes from their nose? No, not like that. What it means is, here the word prakasha, light, is used in a sense of, in the sense that there's a door and the door is dark completely. Then some thief might sneak in and we would not notice also. Or there may be some restless child who might just go out into the road, and we don't want him to go there, but child will just go there. So if the doors are illumined, then we can know who is coming in and who is going out. And we can discern, should this person be allowed inside or should this person be allowed to go outside. So basically, light at the door of the senses means that when we are illumined in the mode of goodness, we understand what to take in from the outer world and what to give out to the outer world. In the outer world, there are so many stimuli. Now we have to decide what to look at, what to not look at. There is, many of us have seen this, these three monkeys, you know, see no bad, speak no bad, hear no bad. And that's basically, have light at the door of the senses by which we don't take in bad things or we don't give out bad things. So in the mode of goodness, there is prakash. So prakash of what? The illumination. What is the prakash of? Sarvadvareshu dehesmin prakash upajayate jnanam. of knowledge. Tada vidyad vivruddham sattvam ityuta. This is the mode of goodness. Now, in contrast, Krishna says, what is the characteristic of the mode of passion? Lobha pravrittir arambha karmanamasham haspruha rajasyetani jayante viruddhe bharatarshabha. So, this next verse, 14.12, he says that pravritti. Pravritti means I have to do something. Do this, do that. There is a strong urge to do things. There is greed, there is insatiable desire. But the defining characteristic of the mode of passion is the urge to act. So, some people speak to express their thoughts. And some people speak to discover their thoughts. They speak, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that. You know, all of us sometimes have a slip of tongue. Isn't it? And a slip of tongue can be sometimes quite embarrassing. So what happens is, in the mode of passion, there is like in the mode of passion, we speak first and then we think later. So basically in interaction with the world, there is contemplation and there is action. So in the mode of goodness, there is first contemplation and then action. In the mode of passion, there is first action and then contemplation. First we act and then we think. Now we say that there is a tradition saying, look before you leap. That is, which mode? Mode of goodness, yes. And then if you want to embody the mode of passion in a particular saying, we could have it. I think there is a slogan of Nike shoes, just do it. Just do it. Just act. So there is not one thing, just act. So that is the mode of passion, wherein there is the first action and then we contemplate, should I do this, should I not do this? And then there is the mode of ignorance, where Krishna says, aprakasho apravrittischa pramado moha evacha tamasyetani jayante vivruddhe kurunandana. Is aprakasho apravrittischa, there is neither illumination nor action. And what is there? There is simply delusion. One is simply lost inside the head. Aprakash pramado moha evacha, in illusion and madness, disconnected from the world, tamasya etani jayante. This is the mode of ignorance. So in the mode of ignorance, you know, people are just lost in their things. Maybe this will happen, that will happen. What about this? What about that? What about that? They just don't do anything at all. Just they stuck in their thoughts. So yes, we do. Now if you see the mode of goodness and the mode of ignorance can sometimes appear very similar. In the mode of action, in the mode of passion, there is a lot of action. In the mode of goodness, there is first contemplation and action. When action is immediately not there. In the mode of ignorance also, action is immediately not there. But the big difference is, in goodness, there is internally the thoughtfulness. Okay, what about this? What about this? We are calmly analyzing, discussing. So when we are sitting in a class, usually we are running around in life, so that's in the mode of passion. When we come to a class, we can either come in goodness or we can come in ignorance. And sometimes it's easier to go into ignorance than to go into goodness. So you might just glide off into, you know, when we are often having a class, what happens is the mind decides to go off for a walk. I want to go here, let me go there. And then suddenly some joke happens in the class, hey, come back. Hey, what is the joke? I also want to laugh. And the mind comes back. So basically, in the mode of ignorance, one is not thinking clearly, one is just going along with the mind wherever it is going. So in the mode of goodness, there is contemplation, means one is directing one's thoughts. Okay, if this happens, we'll do this. If this happens, we'll do this. If this happens, we'll do this. So, because in the mode of ignorance, there is no proper thought at all, just wandering with the mind, it is characterized by helplessness. One just feels very helpless. One just doesn't do anything, one doesn't think clearly, one just is helpless. So, we could put it in the three modes in this way, that some people make things happen. In the mode of goodness, people think, plan, okay, I do this, you do this, we'll all do this together, and we'll get this done. Some people make things happen. Some people watch things happen. The mode of passion, people start off, I try to do one thing, but then I don't think about it. Sometimes we just decide to go, I don't go to this program, but then we go half the way, hey, you know, okay, I forgot to take my entry card, I forgot to take this, you come back again, and you go back, you just start to do things, and one thing goes wrong, another thing goes wrong, third thing goes wrong, and the whole thing becomes a mess. We try to be inspired, we want to get someone to do something, but we speak something in a way which is indiscreet, and they get hurt and they complain here, they speak that over there, speak that over there. What happened? So some people make things happen, some people watch things happen, and some people wonder what happened. So those who wonder what happened are in which mode? Ignorance. Yes, they're just lost. Just in a stupor, not knowing what is going on. So basically, now how these three, this is a broad understanding of three modes. Now how does this apply to our self-conception? Our conception of ourselves. So that means, now if we consider, the Krishna talks also about knowledge in the three modes. This is in the 14th chapter, gives the broad characteristics of the three modes. But he talks about knowledge in three modes in the 18th chapter. And there he talks about 18.20, 21, 22. Knowledge in the three modes of material nature. So I earlier said we take in the world from outside and then we act with the world. So when we take in information from the world, now for us, we ourselves also are the object. Whenever there is conscious experience, there are three elements in it. There is the subject of consciousness, there is the perceiver. Say for example, right now you are hearing me. That means so you are the subject of consciousness. You are the person who is perceiving. And then between you and me, there is a stream of consciousness is coming towards me. And then you are observing me. So I am the object of consciousness. So for you, for me, you are the object of consciousness. I am the subject of consciousness. So basically, whenever conscious perception happens, there are these three things. There is the subject of consciousness, the stream of consciousness, and the object of consciousness. So now this we can apply to ourselves also. So for example, if we go in front of a mirror and we look at ourselves, at that time we are the observer, but we are also the observed. So between us and the mirror is the stream of consciousness. So now when we are talking about self-conception, how we look at ourselves, that means in that case that we are both the subject of consciousness and the object of consciousness. So Krishna says, so when we interact with the object of consciousness, then we take in something from there. The door, if the door is illumined, we know what to take in, and whom to let out. So we take in certain information from the outer world and we act in the outer world. So our whole session, this will be based on this understanding. How do we look at ourselves and how do we act with ourselves? So there is, first I'll talk about knowledge in the three modes, that is 18.20 to 22. And then later I'll talk about determination in the three modes, which Krishna talks about in 18.33 to 35. So it's interesting, Krishna differentiates between three things. Actually four things over there. He talks about knowledge in the three modes, then he talks about work in the three modes, then he talks about worker in the three modes, then he talks about intelligence in the three modes, and then he talks about determination in the three modes. And finally he talks about pleasure in the three modes. So we will not go into that whole thing, will be a seminar in itself. Our talk is focused on self-conception. But knowledge in the three modes means there is a lot of information out there in the world. We take in some information. So the modes will shape what kind of information we take in from the outer world. So let's look at the mode of ignorance first. That's 18.22. Yattu krutsnavade kasmin karye saktamahaitukam atattvarthavad alpamcha tattamasamudharutam. Yattu krutsnavad ekasmin. They take one thing to be everything. So observe one thing and make it into everything. Yattu krutsnavad ekasmin karye saktam ahaitukam. They just become irrationally attached to that one thing or one mode of action, and that's all. Ahaitukam. There is no proper cause effect connection. Atattvarthavat. There is no proper understanding of the truth. Alpamcha. That understanding is very meager. Tad tamasam udaharutam, Krishna says, that is knowledge in the mode of ignorance. It's interesting, normally we consider knowledge and ignorance to be opposite. But what does knowledge in the mode of ignorance mean? It means the knowledge that increases ignorance. How can knowledge increase ignorance? Here ignorance refers to not to so much just absence of knowledge, but having one particular perspective. Say for example, in the past, in the Western world, say there was racism. In India, there was casteism. So in these kind of isms, essentially, people are defined by one characteristic. Either the family in which they were born, or the color of their skin. And when this happens, now okay, the color of the skin, the family of the birth, that is one feature. But the person is a whole complete being, and they have many other aspects. But you reduce the whole person to just one feature of theirs. And then everything we perceive in that filter. Perceive through that filter. That means, okay, then even if, say, if people have a particular prejudice. See, prejudice or bias, what does it mean? That essentially means that we take a small sample. Now, say one person from a particular community or particular race was very aggressive. And based on that, we brand people of this community or this race are aggressive. One person was unclean, dishonest. Say everybody is dishonest in this. So we take a narrow sample and make a huge extrapolation based on that. And then, even if the experience, we could say, you know, even if we have a conception, this person is dishonest, or this community is dishonest, we think like that. Then even if somebody in that community is honest, and they are in a very upright way, they are dealing with us, we think, this must be just show. They are just waiting for an opportunity to cheat me. So here what has happened, we filter everything through our bias. And such people, you know, actually, if somebody has a concept, you know, this community is dishonest. They keep cheating. Then, even if in the news, they will only zero in on the news. Hey, this person from this community did this. This person from this community did this. There will be 100 other things that people in that community might be doing, but they will just zero in on that. So what happens? They have knowledge, but their knowledge increases their ignorance. Their ignorance means they are seeing only one aspect of that community or that group or that person, and they're not seeing anything else. So knowledge in the mode of ignorance means it is knowledge which just perpetuates our ignorant conception of things, our uninformed conception of things. So just as it can, this can apply to external other people. Just take one feature of theirs and we just define them. Now, our mind keeps doing that. You know, sometimes we see a person, this person, so proud. This person, so untidy. This person, so irresponsible. This person, so forgetful. Our mind keeps giving a free commentary on everything that is happening. You know, it keeps going commentary. Now, turn this same thing around to ourselves. And in the mode of ignorance, we just take one feature of ourselves and let it define us. Just one feature about ourselves. It may be, like earlier said, it may be our looks. Oh, I don't look good enough. Oh, I look so great. Or it may be our financial status. You know, oh, I'm so wealthy. Oh, I don't have any money. It may be whatever particular feature our mind zeroes in on, it just defines us entirely through that filter. So somebody might actually be reasonably successful and happy. But say in their childhood, they had a brother and who was very good at things. And their parents are always comparing. You know, see, you know, you got this much marks, your brother was getting so many marks. Now in their own life, they might be having a good job, a good family. They're happy. But as soon as they see their brother, oh, he's earning so much. Oh, he has this. So what happens? Their whole world, they are filtering through the filter of comparing with their brother. Now, brother is just one metaphor. We may be comparing with someone else. So we all have in the mode of ignorance, we just take one parameter or one reference point for deciding everything. And then each of us is a multifaceted, complex being. And sometimes some one thing we might just not be able to do well. We all have certain conditionings because of which some things may just not work out. So there is no need to get obsessed on one thing alone. So in the all of us in our life, we have certain weaknesses and we have certain strengths. And in the mode of ignorance, we see only the wrong things with us. In our life, again, associated with the weakness and strengths, in every situation that we are in, there is something which is in our control and some things which are out of our control. So, all of us can look at the things which are in our control and do something positive about it. Or all of us can look at the things that are out of our control and can get worried. So, if we consider the three modes of material nature with this dynamic, in the mode of ignorance, we only look at the things that are not in our control and feel sorry for ourselves. Oh, you know, this is not working, that is not working, this is not happening, that is not happening. What to do? So, that's just not in their control. Now, all of us, say, are born with a particular complexion. Now, some people lifelong just keep detesting them for their complexion. Well, move on with life. It's not the end of the world, whatever complexion one has. Now, complexion is a very drastic example. But the point I'm making is that there are certain things, okay, the complexion in which I was born, that's the family in which I was born, the race in which I was born, that's not in my control. So, when we keep obsessing over things that are not in our control, we just feel helpless, we feel powerless, we feel sorry for ourselves. So this, in the mode of ignorance, we focus on the things that are not in our control. And just the mind goes, oh, no, this is like this, this is like that, this is like that. Feel sorry for ourselves. In the mode of passion, we focus only on the things that are in our control. And again, we don't get a complete picture. So in the mode of passion, we focus only on our strengths. Whatever, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it. There are many people, you know, if we have a group meeting where some responsibilities are to be assigned, there are some people who come up and say, I'll do everything. And actually when it comes to doing, they don't do anything at all. Because what happens in the mode of passion, we just focus only on our strengths, we don't acknowledge our limitations, and we overestimate our capacity to do things. In the mode of goodness, we're able to see better. Okay, I have these strengths and I have these weaknesses. Let me use my strengths properly and let me manage my weaknesses. So there is a holistic picture. So now, with respect to our self-conception, I talked about these two extremes where we hate ourselves or we become narcissistic in terms of, you know, just thinking how great I am. So if we correlate these two together, so hating ourselves would be characteristic of which mode? Mode of ignorance, yes, isn't it? Just look at one weakness and let it define us. And conversely, just being narcissistic would be in which mode? Passion, you know, oh, I'm so good, I'm so good, I'm so good. Just look at one thing and just gloat about that. Gloat about that. In the mode of goodness, we're able to see properly, okay, this is my strengths, these are my weaknesses. And actually, if we go beyond that to transcendence, we see that yes, I have these strengths, I have these weaknesses, but ultimately I am a part of Krishna. And whatever be the situation I am in, it is all a part of Krishna's plan. Let me just do the best that I can in my situation. So I'll talk about transcendence in a later session. We'll talk about when we come to the bhakti perspective. But here, the main focus which I'd like to have is that understanding that the modes shape our perceptions. And if we are in the mode of ignorance, we just, as I said, feel sorry for ourselves. Now, it could be in terms of the weaknesses that we have. It could also be in terms of the bad things that have happened to us. All of us, if we go through life, we all get wounded. Sometimes people let us down. Sometimes just life just has a nasty turn and just all our plans fall apart. We all go through that in life. But if we are in the mode of ignorance, we just keep going on that again and again and again. The bad things that have happened to us, we keep replaying it, replaying it, replaying it. And oh, this person did like this, this person did like that, this person did like that. Okay, they did that. But let's move on with life now. But no, we just keep replaying that again and again and again. In the mode of passion, we just keep replaying whatever pleasures we might have had. And just keep hoping, oh, I'll get that pleasure again, I'll get that pleasure again. Sense attachment happens because, you know, some person has some pleasure, I want it again and again and again and again. Now, yes, certainly we may say, oh, we all want to be happy. So what's wrong with replaying the enjoyable moments that we have had? It's fine. The important thing is we have a purpose in life. We don't want to live in the past, whether in the past pleasures or the past pains. We need to move forward in our life. So in the mode of ignorance, we may let our own weaknesses define us and say, oh, I'm good for nothing. Or we may let our wounds define us. Wounds means that things that have hurt us. Oh, you know, this person did like that to me. So, all of us, as I said, in our life, sometimes people will let us down. We trust someone and they betray us. That's just the way people are in the world. So, but because of that, if I decide that I'll never trust anyone again, and that wound becomes the basis with which I act throughout in the world. All my relationships get filtered through that wound. Then I can't have a healthy relationship with anyone because I'm so insecure, I'm so fearful. So the Bhagavad Gita, when it talks about three modes, it is talking about how we shape our perception. Now ultimately we understand that we are not the body, we are the soul. So the most complete self-understanding is that I am a soul who is a part of Krishna. At the same time, that soul is in a particular body. That soul is in a particular mind. And understanding that body and mind is helpful for us to work in our present situation. Like suppose say we go from one city to another and there we hire a car. And when we hire a car, first, before we start off on a long drive, we might just get a feel of the car. You know, how does this car work? How does this, if you press the gas, how fast does it start moving? Do the brakes work well? If it's a familiar brand, we always hire that car, then more or less we know about it. But if say a familiar brand car is not available, then we have to get a new brand of the car. Then we will first feel around to make sense of, okay, how does this car actually work? And then we'll start driving. So similarly, to get proper self-understanding means not just to understand the self to be the soul, but also to understand the kind of the body and mind that the soul has. So the mind has certain impressions within it. And I will talk more about the mind-body mechanism later, where we will discuss about how the modes act on the mind and how self-pity and humility, these are two broad, self-pity, humility and other emotions which come within us because of the impressions within the mind. So here, I'll summarize and then we can have some questions. I talked today about how the modes distort our self-understanding. And in that, I started by talking about how many people, a common psychological problem in today's world is self-loathing. I started before that, if one phone is the only phone we have, then we'll take great care of it. If a resource is valuable, vital and indispensable, then we take great care of it. So for each one of us, we ourselves are the most fundamental resource that is valuable, vital and indispensable. So to the extent we can properly use this resource, to that extent we can act constructively both in material and spiritual life. So self-loathing is where we dislike and detest ourselves. That usually happens because we have a certain conception of how I should be, and that is contradicted by how we are. In the material realm, it may be how I should look, or how much I should be earning, or how much prestige I should have in society. In the spiritual realm, it should be, oh, I should be this much pure, I should be following these standards. Either way, we can have this self-loathing where we start hating ourselves. And that is, it is a very uncomfortable situation to be in. Just as if we dislike someone and we have to be with that person, we are always very, very uncomfortable. Similarly, if we dislike ourselves, if we are uncomfortable with ourselves, where will we go? We can't go out of our presence also. So redefining our relationship is necessary for us to function properly. So other extreme could be narcissism, where we just irrationally obsess over ourselves. So both these extremes of self-loathing and self-obsession in terms of narcissism, these are unhealthy. And how do these arise? I talked about three modes. Goodness is characterized by contemplation before action. Passion by action before contemplation. And ignorance by neither contemplation nor action, simply delusion. So, in the mode of ignorance, there is the object of consciousness, subject of consciousness, and stream of consciousness. This can be towards the outer world, this can be towards ourselves also. So, in the mode of ignorance, we just take one feature and obsess over that. So, in the mode of ignorance, we may take one weakness of ours and just let that define us. In the mode of passion, we take one strength and let it define us. We don't acknowledge our weaknesses. In goodness, we acknowledge both our strengths and our weaknesses. We learn to manage our weaknesses and use our strengths. Or, so this is with respect to how we are, it could be what happens to us. We just look at the wounds that we have had and we let those define everything about us. So, when we take one thing to be everything, then that is knowledge in the mode of ignorance. Wherein, we may increase our knowledge, but that knowledge only reinforces our ignorant conception of things. Like we may be biased against a particular community, and we only look at that news of that community which reinforces that bias. Similarly, we may have a particular conception of ourselves, and we look at only those actions which reinforce that conception. And in that way, we stay helpless. So, if we are to change ourselves, if we are to become better, then we have to look at what is not in our control, what is in our control, and focus on that which is in our control. So, in the mode of ignorance, we just obsess over what is not in our control and feel sorry for ourselves. In the mode of passion, we think only of that which is in our control and overestimate our capacity. In the mode of goodness, we learn to balance both. What is in our control and what is beyond our control. In that way, we can have a healthy self-understanding and we can move forwards. So, are there any questions or comments at this stage? Yeah.
So, you mentioned obviously people look at one attribute about a particular entity and then extrapolate and get a conclusion. So, if this conclusion is negative, you mentioned that's obviously a mode of ignorance that should be avoided. Can the same be said about looking at one attribute for a particular entity and then having a positive conclusion about that? Is that also a mode of ignorance, even though the outcome is positive?
Okay, good question. So, if you look at one attribute of a particular person and you just define them by that, but if it's a positive attribute, is that also in the mode of ignorance? No, it depends on how we are seeing it. Say, somebody has some special talent. Some say some devotee is a very good singer. Then that devotee may define, their identifying identity in the devotee community would be they're a singer. But if we think they're only a singer, and they're also a human being, they're also a person in their own right. One of India's most famous cricketer was Sachin Tendulkar. So he, at one time, so one of our devotees is interacting with him. So he was telling that how one time India had come to a tour of England or something, an important match was there, and before that his back was injured and he couldn't play. So he said, whoever he would meet, they would all ask, how is your back? How is your back? How is your back? So he said, nobody asked me, how am I? So, for the whole country, you know, they're not seeing him as a person. They're seeing him only as a cricketer who's want to come and play with us. So, he has outstanding batting talent. But still, he's a person. You know, they're not asking, how are you? How is your back? If your back is good, then you'll play for us. Isn't it? So, even if you reduce a person also to just one attribute of theirs, then we may be depersonalizing them. Somebody is a very good singer and we want them to sing kirtans, but they have got a bad throat. So when we they're not able to, so we assume, how is your throat? Well, okay, that's an inquiry, but we don't reduce the person to their throat, isn't it? So that reductionistic vision can be a problem. But if we acknowledging someone's strengths and also acknowledging their whole personality. Yes, this devotee is a very good singer, but then this is also a devotee. They also have their emotions, they also have their needs, they have their likes. So we acknowledge the whole person and we see some outstanding attribute. That is fine. It's not that we shouldn't see. Now, some people may just have some weakness. And we can't be blind to their weakness. Some people are just forgetful. They're very nice, loving, kind, but they just forget things. Then, if that is their weakness, we have to be aware of that. And if something important is to be done, you know, we may have to remind ourselves to remind them. You know, before they, please get this, please get this. They may need 3-4 reminders. So, well, if that is the way it is, that is the way it is. So, it's not that we have to reduce. So I was at one devotee's house. So this Mata, they were telling that, you know, whenever this Prabhu, his very husband is very forgetful. So whenever he goes anywhere, his wife calls him and makes a checklist. Have you taken this, taken this, taken this, taken this? When he comes from temple to the home, she asks him this. Have you taken this, taken this, taken this? And then he'll forget his bead bag, he'll forget this, he'll forget that. Now, so initially I found it a little odd, and they're doing like that. But then they said that, you know, I asked the husband, you know, does he feel bad that she always calls him? He says, no, we just made peace with this. This is the way I am and she is helping me in this. So now the wife also doesn't disrespect her husband, you are so forgetful. No, that's a weakness. See, we all have certain conditionings. And when we understand that, rather than defining a person by the conditioning, we see, you know, we say you have this conditioning and you are like this. Rather than we see that, you know, I have my condition, I am here, you are here, you have this conditioning, I have this conditioning. So let us both come together and help each other fight our conditionings. So if somebody has a particular weakness or a particular strength, acknowledging that is good, but reducing them to that is bad. So if somebody has a weakness, we can't live in denial of that. Now, somebody is just careless about money. And if we make them in charge of accounts of the temple, you know, it's not that they are careless, it's we are careless in giving them that responsibility. So acknowledging people's weaknesses and acknowledging people's strength is just, it's an observation. It's essential. But what I'm talking about is equating people with their strengths or weaknesses. That is where the problem comes. Okay? Thank you. Yes, any question?
Spiritual master is bringing the disciples to the mode of goodness, but if he's expert, he'll also really work on their mode of passion as well. And I'm just thinking, if someone in mode of ignorance, should we be encouraging them to come to the mode of goodness, or at least get them to passion?
Okay, good question. So if somebody's in ignorance, should we try to get them to goodness, or should we at least get them to passion? Yeah, whatever works. So if somebody is sleeping, then if somebody is chanting, they are sleeping, then better get up and walk. If while sleeping, suddenly you decide, I'll sit and chant attentively. Well, the mode of ignorance is so strong, again you'll go to sleep. So sometimes rising from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion is easier. But if I'm running around here and there, and then I'm not able to think clearly, okay, sit down and be a little reflective. So it depends on what level we are at, that what is the next level up for us. Sometimes we are so much inside our head, you know, this may go wrong, that may go wrong, that may go wrong. And if I say this, this person will do this. If I say this, they will think like this. If I say this, they'll think like this. And you don't do anything at all. You'll get out of your head, get into the world, do something. And then, okay, if people think that way, then you can respond properly. So if you're just too much in the head, just get out of the head. And people say, people go out for a walk, go out for a ride. Just get out of the head. So living in the head is living in the mode of ignorance too much. So then sometimes just now going out for a walk or going out for a ride may not be in the mode of passion literally. But it's just getting out of the head, doing some activity so that we are not so caught in the head. But sometimes we are running around, our mind is also running around here, there, and we need to calm it down and focus on some things. So then we need to, okay, get out of the world and get into your heart. Look within, plan properly. So what is required when will vary. So basically, we have to make sure that we are able to function effectively. And we have to help others to function effectively. Now what is required for whom to function effectively, that will vary from person to person. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Actually, to answer this question, I'm going to talk about the whole concept of the mind. So, would you like to have a 5-minute break and then we'll start once again, then we'll continue till 1 o'clock? Is that okay? So, we had an hour session. So, 12, maybe 12:20, 12:20, 12:5 we'll meet and then we'll go on till 1:10, something like that. We'll answer that time. Thank you.
Grab a drink or something.